Again, it's John chapter 4, verses 10 through 30. So, thinking about this here, well, first of all, it's thinking about how many of you came to faith in Jesus Christ by watching TV. Just curious. Anyone here? Okay. Or how about listening to something on the radio? Or maybe at a church service? Maybe by witness of another person in your life? Well, typically, it's usually the last two, right? By witness of another person in your life or at a church service. And typically, it starts with the witness of another person saying, hey, you should come check out my church or whatever the case may be, right? So thinking about how you're coming to Christ and thinking about this, the title of our lesson, our study, right, is sharing your faith. Now, the question for this evening is, how do you do that? What is the method? What's the approach? Is there one? And the answer is yes. It comes from Jesus himself with the woman at the well of Samaria. Something about this woman, she wasn't predisposed to hearing the message. She wasn't raised in a Christian environment. She's hardened by life, calloused by the experiences of life. But through this encounter is how Jesus led her to the living water. Now, thinking about this story, in 1949, there is this guy named John Currier. He was sentenced to life in prison because he was convicted of murder. And he's living out his life sentence. And when after several years passes, he was paroled to a work farm environment and a work farm near Nashville, Tennessee. In 1968, his sentence was terminated and a letter was sent to him to tell him that he's a free man. But he never saw that letter. He never got it. He never was told about it, never read it. So he stayed working for 10 more years until a parole officer finally heard about it and told him about that letter. They found the letter, showed it to him. Now this guy, John Currier, was released. Now here's the question that follows that story. Would it matter to you if somebody sends you an important message, the most important message of your whole life, but year after year, it was not delivered? It would totally matter. Like it mattered to John Currier. So that's really the thrust of tonight's message. Right, is delivering the message. Now, we have the greatest message in the world, or the greatest message the world has ever known. And it's a life-changing gospel of Jesus Christ. And we need to deliver it. So as we look through John chapter 4, I want you to really look at these two principles that's going on in here, and it's really your attitude, or my attitude, or I should say our attitude, and the approach. So attitude and approach, both are important. Attitude, all important. Your attitude will show. People will know if you care about them or not. Even a dog knows if you care about it or not. Now, people don't know how much or don't care about how much you know until they know that you care. But then there's the approach, right? I know a lot could be said about what's the proper approach to an unbeliever. One might say, hey, there's classes, there's seminars, whatever the case may be with that. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm for all of them. And anything that will motivate a believer to share the faith with somebody else is a great thing. But I also believe in keeping it simple. Now, let's begin with attitude. a loving attitude. Start asking God to give you a loving attitude towards people who are lost. Now, here's the problem with some of us, okay? Some of us have been saved for so long that we forget what it's like to be lost. Ask God to give you love for those who are lost. And we can't do what we're called to do without that love. Now, let's just say you're a doctor. Theoretically, you can practice medicine without love. You might not love your patients. You're in it for the money, but it's possible to approach that patient and treat the patient without having a depth of love for that person. If you're a lawyer, you can do your job without love for your clients. If you're an engineer, the same is true. But you can't, I can't, do what we're called to do in reaching the world successfully without love. Jesus was filled with love for this woman at the well. Now, what I want you to know before we really get into the depth of this passage is that the Jews and the Samaritans had a rift between them, and Jesus needed to go through Samaria. So needless to say, the Jews and the Samaritans, they didn't hang out together. They didn't high-five each other. They didn't Facebook each other. They didn't Twitter each other. None of this. Okay. So now let's dig into John 4, verses 10 through 12. And this is what Jesus interests the woman in living water, right? Verses 10 through 12, it says, Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that is saying to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." The woman said to him, "Sir, you have nothing to draw water with, and the well is deep. Where do you get the living water? Are you greater than the father Jacob? He gave us the well and drank from it himself, as did his sons and the livestock." Now, let's see this approach, okay? This woman's at the well. Jesus never says, knowing this lady's history, never says, "Hey, I'm done with you. I'm out of here." No. What we need to see is that he stays with her at this well. And staying with her at this well, Jesus drew this woman into conversation, making her curious about several things. He made her curious about the things of God. We see that if he says, "If you knew the gift of God." Okay. He made her curious about who Jesus is, who it is who says to you. Made her curious about what he could give her. He would have given you living water. Okay. So she's curious. Now, you have to understand something when you deal with unsaved people. Lost people, they don't know that they're lost. You'll rarely enter a conversation with somebody and that person will go, "Yeah, I know that I'm lost. I'm on my way to eternal damnation and I need a savior." They won't say that. The only time people will really get in touch with their lostness is when they are found and they look back and go, "Man, was I lost." So, kind of going back to what we're talking about here with living water. So, in ancient times, they called the spring water living water. And because it seemed alive as it bubbled up from the ground. Might seem that Jesus told this woman about a nearby spring, but Jesus made a play on his words with the phrase living water, because he meant spiritual water that gives life. Now, it's hard to tell if the woman asked a sincere question or if she was cynical, a cynical critic, all depended on the tone of her voice. The fact that she came to belief at the end of her encounter with Jesus may suggest it was an honest question. Now, thinking about someone who's lost, let's just say you're standing in line at a supermarket and there's a few people in front of you. What do you usually see in the checkout stand, right? You see the little newspapers, the inquirers, whatever is there, and there's bad news like every day. Somebody looks at the headlines and they're like, they say out loud, "What is this world coming to?" We say that when we see the news. What is this world coming to? But you're in this line at the supermarket. You hear this person say that. There's your opportunity. They're asking a question. You could come around and say, "Hey, well, it seems as though this world is right on schedule." And they're going to be like, "What? What did he mean by that? What does she mean by saying that?" And I think that would be better. A better approach would be than saying, "Well, actually, I'm glad that you asked. This is what the world is coming to. It's coming to judgment. God's coming back and he's going to get you." And then they're going to be like, "What?" You're going to start sparking their curiosity. What is this guy talking about? It may not get their curiosity right there in that line, but they might go to bed that night or on their drive home. They're going to be thinking. You plant the seed, right? Now let's look at John in John 4, 13, verse 13 through 15. It says, "Jesus said to her, 'Everyone who drinks of this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks of the water that I will give him will never be thirsty again. The water that I will give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life.' The woman said to him, 'Sir, give me this water so that I will not be thirsty or have to come here to draw water.'" So with this, Jesus describes the effect of the living water that he offers. Jesus knew that this woman and everyone in the village had to come to this well daily to satisfy their natural thirst. Now, you might sit there saying, "Okay, well, what does this woman at the well have to deal with sharing your faith?" And we're going to start to see that effect coming up here shortly. But talking about this natural thirst, Jesus used thirst as a picture of a spiritual need, a longing that everyone has. And Jesus also made an amazing offer. What he offered to this woman and to anyone who would drink was something to give lasting satisfaction. And it's common for people to try and satisfy their God-created inner thirst through many things or through anything except for what Jesus gives. But anytime that we try to fulfill or satisfy ourselves with something other than what Jesus gives, we're always going to be missing something. We're going to be lost. We're not going to be fed. People are thirsty. They want, they long, they search, they reach, but only what Jesus gives satisfies to the deepest levels of a man's soul and spirit. Now, the effect of water does much more than simply satisfy thirst of one who drinks it. It creates something good, something life-giving in heart of the one who drinks it. So the response of the Samaritan woman was really logical, yet not spiritual. She wanted to avoid work of coming to the well every day. So you kind of see her struggle, right? She's listening, but she's like, hey, she's thinking like, hey, I can have water all the time, but I don't have to come to the well. She hasn't quite got it yet. But it was as if she responded, "Jesus, if you want to make my life easier and more convenient, then I'm all for it. Give it to me." That's almost how she responded. Now, let's look at verses 16 through 19. It says, "Jesus said to her, 'Go, call your husband and come here.' The woman answered him, 'I have no husband.' Jesus said to her, you are right in saying I have no husband, for you have five husbands, and the one you now have is not your husband. What you have said is true. The woman said to him, sir, I perceive that you are a prophet. So, what is it meaning here? Okay. Jesus is speaking of her sinful life. Okay. Jesus said, go, call your husband and come here. And she says, I don't have a husband. And Jesus turns around and says, you've had five husbands. Now, this wasn't a strange request, right? In this extended public conversation with the woman, Jesus was straining the boundaries of cultural propriety, right? The conversation would be more culturally appropriate if the woman's husband were present. But the woman claimed to have no husband, technically true, but Jesus knew supernaturally that there was much more to the story of the woman's marriage history. So regardless of what we're saying or someone else is saying, there's more to their story. There's more to our story. But Jesus brought up this embarrassing issue because her sinful life had to be confronted. This woman had to decide what she loved more, her sin or the Messiah. Verses 20 through 26, we're going to see it says, our fathers worshipped on this mountain, but you say that in Jerusalem is a place where people ought to worship. Jesus said to her, woman, believe me, the hour is coming when neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem will you worship the Father. You worship what you do not know. We worship what we know, for salvation is from the Jews. But the hour is coming and is now here when the true worshipers will worship the Father in the spirit and truth, for the Father is seeking such people to worship him. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth. The woman said to him, I know that Messiah is coming, he who is called Christ. When he comes, he will tell us all things. Jesus said to her, I who speak to you am he. Now, the Samaritan woman and Jesus is discussing the aspects of worship. Okay, they're in conversation. And it's possible that this was a genuine source of confusion, right, to her. But more likely, this was an evasion, right? She's trying to avoid the issue of her prior husbands and her current non-husband. She offered an argument about places of worship here, but Jesus didn't take the bait. Jesus was more interested in winning a soul than winning an argument, right? And when we're sharing our faith, how easy is it to turn into an argument? Very easy. But we're not to argue. That's why they always say, hey, if you're going to share your faith, and if somebody is not open to discussing and having a good conversation about it, it's okay to move on to the next person that will accept or even give you the time of day to listen. You know, he doesn't want an argument. Now, though this woman was a sinner, Jesus revealed himself to her. Jesus reveals himself to sinners. Now let's look at verse 27 through 30. This says, just then his disciples came back. They marveled that he was talking with a woman. But no one said, what do you seek? Or why are you talking with her? So the woman left her water jar and went away into town and said to the people, come see a man who told me all that I ever did. Can this be the Christ? They went out of the town and were coming to him. So what are we seeing here? Okay. The woman tells her neighbors. His disciples came up and marveled that he talked with a woman. And that's funny to our ears, right? But here's the disciples, Peter, James, and John, coming up the hill. And they're like, there's Jesus talking to a woman. And they're like, what? He's talking to a girl? But disciples were surprised that Jesus stretched the limits of cultural propriety with the extended conversation with the Samaritan woman, but yet probably sensing that it was right and appropriate, they didn't question Jesus about this. They had learned enough to know that while Jesus didn't always respect the conventions of rabbis, he had a good reason for what he did. Now, the point is that Jesus obviously didn't care about the social customs of man versus woman. It's a person. A human being is one of his created beings. She lived in Samaria. She needed the truth. He cares about people, all people. But perhaps sensing the silent awkwardness of the disciples, the woman left her conversation with Jesus and went back into the city. She left so impressed by her time with Jesus that she left her water pot at the well. Jesus impressed this woman that she was compelled to tell those in her city that they should come to the well and meet Jesus. And Jesus impressed and attracted her, even though he confronted her with her sin. All the things that I ever did. That's what she says. Even with all that stuff said, she was still impressed and attracted. Jesus displayed so much love and such a sense of security that she felt safe with him, even when her sin was exposed. So it's important for followers of Jesus to give people today a safe place to confess their sin, repent, and put their trust in Jesus. Now, the whole interaction with Jesus didn't leave her with an impression that, oh, he hates me for what I've done. He judges me. He doesn't want to be around me. No, it left her with the impression that was quite possibly Jesus was who he claimed to be, the Messiah, the Christ. Now, this woman's invitation was effective. People came when she told them who Jesus was and how he had impacted her life with their brief conversation. But this is testimony. A lot of times people think, oh, my testimony is a big, long story of how I came to Christ and it had to be bad. It had to be this. And, you know, a lot of times it's a testimony could be something that happened to you yesterday, this morning. What did God do for you to help somebody, whether you're waiting in line at a supermarket, waiting in a doctor's office waiting room, anywhere? And I have a question I want you to just answer privately in your hearts, okay? No need to say it out loud, but privately in your heart. Is there a culture that you have trouble with that either presses your limits, whatever the case may be? Think about this. Has there been something that's, and sometimes it may not be something personal. Maybe it's just something that you were taught from your parents or your grandparents. Has there been something passed down to you from your parents or grandparents, and or even some of the circles that you hang out with? And you need to think about this. If there is, ask God to help you with this. We're human. We're sinful. We're not perfect. But we got to ask God. And I want to share this little story. I want to share with you because it's important. And a lot of times when we see certain people, it could be the homeless person at the bus stop that is hungry. It's not saying, hey, you got to go stop at every corner and feed them or whatever the case may be. If it's on your heart, then yes. But think about something. If you have the opportunity to do something, you know, you can. And the story I'm about to share with you is important because it's going to reflect on how stepping aside for one moment, whether they're homeless, whether they need help, somebody at work or at school or wherever. Who here knows who Mahatma Gandhi is? You probably know him more by Gandhi, but great Hindu leader, a social worker. Did you know that he almost became a Christian? Almost. He wrote an autobiography. He was reading the Gospels. he was so impressed with Christ that he wanted to convert to Christianity. He thought that Christianity would be the answer to India's caste system. But you know what kept him from becoming a Christian? Christians. The Christians prevented him from becoming Christian. He said that he was going to church one Sunday for instruction on Christianity and baptism, and he was stopped at the door. He was refused a seat in the church, and a person at the door said, "Go and worship with your own kind." So he left that church, never to return to another church in his life. So he wrote this autobiography, and he said in this autobiography, "Well then, if Christians have a caste differences, I might as well remain a Hindu." So, thinking about this interaction, it was just something as simple as somebody wanted to attend a church. And that's like on the, what you could say, the home playing field, right? But let's just say we're an away game, right? We're at the supermarket, or you're down the street, or whatever the case may be, and you have an opportunity to give that love and share your faith. And sometimes sharing faith doesn't mean, hey, going up to there and saying, "Hey, do you love Jesus Christ?" or anything like that. Sometimes sharing your faith is just a part of an act. Do you show your love verbally with somebody, or do you show your love in an act of kindness? You know, reflecting to be Christ-like. So do you thinking about that question, you ask yourself, do you have a caste system in your heart? Does that need to be torn down? Then just start right here, or right there, and ask Jesus to give you love for people to share the message. And it's love, working with anyone. And that's what Christ wants us to do when sharing that message. So the Samaritan woman happened to be at the well. Jesus came across to her, started a conversation with her. He revealed her sinful ways. But are we revealing it in a kind and loveful way? Have a discussion. Sometimes it's about planting the seed and then letting God do the watering to lift up the rest. Or you might go all the way with this person and start little personal devotions with them. Whatever God has placed on your heart and guides you and directs you to do, you know, we need to listen to God to guide us and direct us when that time comes. Even if we're in fear of doing so, even if we are nervous about doing so, we can have comfort. In Psalms 23, as we walk through this valley of the shadow of death, sometimes we're going to walk through those valleys. It's not always peak to peak, but he will be there to give us strength in those times.